Yo, 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 what up? It's your boy, Colby Mack, and this is the Colby Told Me podcast. Yo, whenever I want to, deep dive with the Mack himself, where I get to amplify my movie reviews for your listening pleasure. Would you please consider giving your boy a follow? I'm on all the socials, at Colby Told Me, on Twitter and Instagram, and sometimes, the rare sometimes, I'm on Facebook, at Colby Mack. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. This is episode 3, Consistency. The first part to the 11th film franchise, but this is the 10th film, the movie of the Fast Saga. For some reason, not a Furious one, Fast X. Or it's also called Fast 10. Can we just discuss how ridiculous the naming conventions are in this film franchise? A matter of fact, the only consistent thing to this franchise is the fact that we call it a franchise. And at the turn of the century, we had the first film, The Fast and the Furious. Very simple, to the point. I knew what I was in for. Los Angeles police officer Brian O'Connor must decide where his loyalty really lies when he becomes enamored with the street racing world he's been sent to undercover to destroy. And we got exactly what we came for. Fast cars, beautiful women, we got action, and we got street racing. And somehow, each subsequent film gets more ludicrous with the fast cars, the hot women, the action, and the street racing. And of course, the titling, Too Fast, Too Furious, which, like, it kind of makes sense. This is the second film in the franchise, and it's a play on words, in which now we still have former cop Brian O'Connor is called upon to bust a dangerous criminal, and he recruits the help of a former childhood friend and street racer who has a chance to redeem himself. Once again, very straightforward. Shout out to Eva Mendes. I miss her on screen. And it's so funny because there was like that tweet that went viral when they said, yo, when did the Fast and Furious films kind of jump the shark and become something more than what it was? And I remember seeing the clip of like, yo, when this, I think it was a Charger. I mean, it has to be a Charger, right? Goes airborne into the back of a yacht. That's when we're onto something pretty crazy. And then can we really count Tokyo Drift? Like, honestly, that's outside of the first one, that's probably the most straightforward, right? Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift. Like, okay, cool. But once again, you get no Vin Diesel and you get no Brian O'Connor, RIP Paul Walker. But then we kind of come back to where the franchise was reinvigorated and they said, you know what? Even though the first film was called The Fast and the Furious, if you drop the does, we can just rebrand this thing as Fast and Furious. In which Brian O'Connor, back working for the FBI in Los Angeles, teams up with Dominic Toretto to bring down a heroin importer by infiltrating his operation. Still very much straightforward. I think it was a great shot in the arm to reinvigorate the franchise, kind of like what Ghost Protocol did for Mission Impossible. Now, granted, even though Mission Impossible came a little bit later, I think that like Vin Diesel could see the future. It was like, hey, yo, I want to do something different with the action movie drama franchise. And so we did. Because then you had Fast 5, which it's just Fast, not the number 5, but spelt out. And it becomes something completely else. But still, there are street races, even though we don't get to see the talked about best one in the movie. No, there's really no street races as we know them inside the film. But there's a lot of action. There's a lot of cool characters that we're coming to love. Because in this time, the movie's not about Brian. This is where the series switches over completely, and it's about Dom. Dominic Toretto and his crew of street racers, kind of, plan a massive heist to buy their freedom while in the sights of a powerful Brazilian drug lord and a dangerous federal agent. And funny enough that the review for Fast X, which I promise you is coming, is principally based off the back of this film. And this, in my opinion, as the opinions of many, is the best film of the franchise. It's the film that really kind of took this and it evolved from just a street racing movie to something more, where essentially you had these characters, which by this time were beloved because they were endeared, and there were certain things that were earned through the plot development, not character development. Like, that's not what we're coming to these movies for. And in my opinion, this is where we kind of get these characters transforming into super spy superheroes. And on the back of the untimely death of Paul Walker, we had a couple of films that really changed things. And I think it changed things for the good and the bad. Once again, to the silly naming conventions, we had the prior film called Fast Five. And somehow you would think, oh, then the next movie has to be called Fast Six. No, it's called Fast and Furious Six, which would make me believe that there's a Fast and Furious 1, 2, 3, 4, but there's not. There's Fast and Furious Six, Hobbs and Dominic and Brian. Why is he called Dominic? He's Dom. They reassemble their crew to take down a team of mercenaries. Dom unexpectedly gets sidetracked with facing his presumed deceased girlfriend, Letty. Let me tell you that at the end of Fast Five is one of the few times that I can remember in recent history, Kobe history, that is, hello, in which I was generally shocked, because not only was Fast Five so good, but it left a stinger that really teased the next movie. And it's like, oh, snap! Letty's back! And we get that movie, and then we get Furious 7. Why? You just Fast and Furious 6, and then we have Furious. At this point, I'm pretty sure people are just like drawing names out of a hat, and they're doing it on purpose. It's got to be a joke. Deckard Shaw seeks revenge against Dom Toretto and his family for his comatose brother. Shout out to IMDb and their silly plots, too. Now, can anyone guess what will be the name of the next Fast and Furious movie? Once again, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6, Furious 7, and no, it's called The Fate of the Furious F8. Yeah. And there's not even a number 8 in the word fate, but I guess it's the, it makes no sense. When a mysterious woman seduces Dom Toretto into the world of terrorism and a betrayal of those closest to him, the crew face trials that will test them as never before. And even more silly, you have F9. Nope. It couldn't be called The Fate of the Furious 9 or Fast and Furious. It's called F9, semicolon, The Fast Saga. As if this is the new entry into some different story. It's not, because it's the same characters as we've loved them before, but yet a silly naming convention, which makes no sense. Yes, the entire thing is the Fast Saga. And then we come to this film, Fast X. No ampersand. And then or semicolon, the Fast Saga. It's just Fast X, or sometimes it's called Fast 10. It should have been Fast 10, your seatbelts. It was right there for you, Universal. And this time around, Dom Toretto and his family are targeted by the vengeful son of drug kingpin Hernan Reyes. And of course, for those that have survived all these films, we know how this stuff plays out. It's pretty much copy and paste at this point. And you know what? I'm not even too mad at it. Like, kind of makes sense. I guess if anything, you know, we have the writers on strike right now, and studios are like, yo, y'all do realize like what we do here, right? Like with these films, like it's not rocket science. It's pretty much like cookout mission, bad guys edge out somehow, family soap opera in between, introduce a new original song. Then we got a new plan to beat those bad guys, possibly a double cross or a returning character or a combination of them both. They overcome, epic finale, and then original song to play out. That's not hard to write, but we still need to pay the writers. Hashtag, I am down with the writer strike. But there is a little bit more to Fast X. Like we got to be real, right? Because it's not just a matter of, you know, this new returning. It's a little bit more because, you know, they're super spies now, you know? So they're being asked to be able to do something dangerous because that's a part of it. But like, they're not stealing, you know, CD players from cars and DVD players and stuff like that, because over many missions against impossible odds, Dom Toretto and his family, they've outsmarted and outdriven every foe in their path. Now they must confront the most lethal opponent they've ever faced. Fueled by revenge, a terrifying threat emerges from the shadows of the past to shatter Dom's world and destroy everything and everyone he loves. this movie should not be called Fast X. It should be called Fast Redcon, because gosh, do these movies work really, really hard to shoehorn every probable or improbable thing that happens next. Now, you guys know the Kobe rules. Do I believe in this world? Hell no. I think it's pure, like, it's lunacy. But then again, we keep coming back to it. In this instance, this is a return to Fast Five, the best film of the franchise. We're back to Brazil, kind of. So, like, this particular world, we're invested because it's been a part of our life for 20 plus years. And what's happened since Fast Five and every subsequent film thereafter is that this becomes a globe-hopping action spy adventure. And I love the globe-hopping. Insert title card. We're here, here, here. We have no idea how anybody gets anywhere, but insert title card. We're here, here, here. And they bring their cars with them. Yes. That charger is going everywhere. But I like the globe hopping. It's kind of like Twisted Metal World Tour that I used to play on, like, PlayStation. And yes, I know that there's a Twisted Metal series with Anthony Mackie that's coming out on Peacock. I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to enjoy it because it looks not good. But if this is how we could be able to get Twisted Metal some way, somehow, I'll accept it in the Fast franchise. Now, do I believe in these characters? I guess. Because they did things right in the first one, kind of the second one, definitely in the fourth and fifth one. And because there was so much emotionality and sentimentality with the passing of Paul Walker, the sixth and seventh films, we hold them a little bit near and dear. Like, I mean, come on, that Wiz Khalifa song and... Can I see you again? Like, that was a banger. It was. It got you. It will not have been denied. But between the world and the characters live in them, this feels like make-believe. Like, there's no way this could be our world. And the direction of this world feels all over the place. Like, there's not necessarily a signature that any director could put their stamp on, necessarily. If anything, like, the most cohesive part of this is Vin Diesel's heavy-handedness in the direction of this franchise as executive producer. So much so that Justin Lin had to say, yo, I'm tapping out. You're too much for me, my guy. Maybe The Rock was right. Then again, maybe he wasn't. Because inside these films, you're not necessarily coming for the direction or for these filmmakers to leave an imprint on you. Dom is supposed to do that. Him in his thick boots, that ugly cubic link chain, and of course, his cut-off t-shirts. I mean, this guy will be inside of an armored truck, flip over 100 million times, damn near die, and won't have a spot on that t-shirt. This should be a big Tide ad. That's what it should be. And, like, I believe in these characters, but, like, their goals and their convictions? Nah, because it's not about that. This is very surface level. This is plot-driven, not character-driven. Like, Dom doesn't have an inner goal to go after. Neither does Letty. There's the pure external goal, and I guess that's okay. These films don't need to necessarily try to shoot for the stars and land on the moon. Not trying to out here to win Academy Awards, but I bet you Dominic Toretto really would love to someday, you know? But I think that's, like, the really unique thing of it. And actually, yo, shout out to Kit Stone, at by Kit Stone. She's the creator of Hue Watched It. That's H-U-E, watchedit.com. And she asks, if I could describe the balance of fan service and story, and how could the film have done better with this? Or do you think that they did a good job of balancing the two? I think that the folks that go to watch these films are being serviced completely. The critics that go to review this film are not. And that's okay that there's that difference. As a fan first and a critic principally right after, I can compartmentalize and balance out the two. This is not going to win any awards. I don't necessarily believe it wants to on the front end, but it does in the back end. Vin Diesel would love for this movie to be celebrated because he, in full grandeur, thinks that this is one of the greatest franchises of all time. And I guess technically it is. Like, how consistent have you had a franchise last this long with the same principal characters? That's something that's pretty special. So the fans are being serviced. The story, not so much. And I mean, how could you win the probability and physics just keep being undermined more and more. This is a live action cartoon movie. And there's only so much more that you can take. But we still watch it. Now, it may be a little bit unfair, like, to really not value the effects of what the pandemic did to the way that we interpret films in general, but also a franchise that have been around of us, around with us for multiple generations at this point, right? And it's interesting because, like, I do believe that there are moments that go too far. And I'm sure another question that we received from a fan here, this is at Four-Year Ref Pod, the Four-Year Reference Podcast. Shout out to you, KT and OT. Has it been a moment that was just too ridiculous or something that would have happened to make you tap out? I guess the answer is no, because I'm still here reviewing this 10th movie in this 11th film franchise when you include Hobbs and Shaw. So no, I'm not tapped out. I'm going to keep watching. Somehow this movie ludicrously is no longer a two-parter, which technically it wasn't billed as one until very late. But now there's probably a three-part ending to this epic finale. So it'll end with 12 films, which is better than 11. But I have no idea how you're going to squeeze the juice from this nut. Pause. Kit also asks, who would be a perfect addition to the franchise, either as family or villain? Yo, that's the interesting thing about this film franchise compared to so many others, right? Because this character, this not character-driven movie, which is principally about plot, has so many characters. You got Dom, Letty, Mia, Jacob, Lil Brian, Roman, Tej, Han, Ramsey, Dante, Cypher, Shaw. And then you have the individual villains that kind of come along in Dante, which, yo, shout out to Jason Momoa. This is his greatest performance he's ever delivered on screen. Not to say that there's been a lot, but he is having a ball, and I love to see it. This flamboyant portrayal of this murderous psychopath was a good take. Yes, it can sound like the Joker and all those things, but he's not doing those same affectations of the Joker. I think that he's making this character really his own. And I think, honestly, it's one of the better villains throughout the entirety of the franchise. And by film's end, what we get to, and another question asked, was how much it seems similar to Infinity War. I don't know if I find this film necessarily to be similar to Infinity War. I've heard that critique. This feels a little bit different. This feels like the coming of like one super team versus one super antagonist team. So I'm asking someone to be tagged in to team up with Jason Momoa's Dante. And honestly, with the people that we have in this film, we've got Jason Momoa. We've got John Cena. Why not another, like, not that Jason Momoa was inside the WWE, but like, let's bring in another WWE alum, even though this person claims that they don't want to do action films no more and all this other stuff. But yo, Dave Bautista, you're all done with that Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, right? Go do a Fast movie. They'll throw $20 million at you. They got it. Well, I don't think they got it, but they will get it. This movie cost $340 million before P&A. Do I think it's going to make that back? I don't know. The box office was a lot smaller than what I thought it was going to be, but the fans love it. The critics don't. But I think somewhere where we meet in the middle, this movie's going to be profitable. I mean, yo, it's got a movie theme park ride at Universal Studios because of the franchise. And I'm sure they would love to make another one. So they're already going to do a Fast 11. It's going to be called some silly, stupid name that makes no sense relative to the film before it. It won't be called Fast 11. It'll probably be called Furious 1-1 or some weird XI. I don't know. It's going to be dumb. That's the one thing that I can guarantee you. But it's going to bring Dante back. We know that. And it's unfortunate that a couple of the really cool cameos got spoiled before the film came out. But if you didn't know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he's back as Hobbs. He's returned to the franchise. And so is somehow Gal Gadot. I like the way they did it. Gal Gadot. Her character is coming back. And it makes no sense. It really makes absolutely no sense. But then again, that's okay. You know what? Sometimes I guess we just need popcorn blockbuster films to just make no sense. And it's about as easy as what I told you those elements of the film are going to be. It's got a really flamboyant character in Jason Momoa. This is Dante's revenge. Because somehow we retcon that he was inside of a film in Fast 5 that, like, it looked really, really hokey the way that they plugged him in there. But you know what? It yada yadas it enough to where you're just like, you know what? Sure, you were there. Don't know what you've been doing for the past 10 years. And also, can we just talk about the time, the passage of time in these films? It doesn't make sense. I could have swore that little Brian, Dom's kid, was like a toddler just a film ago. This dude's like 7 or 8 at this point. I have no idea what year it is. I have no idea what people are doing. Like, these people are rich. Rome's rich. And if I can, for a moment, just speak about Roman and Tej and Ramsey and Han. I'm going to call it like the B squad of the inner team. Their hijinks are just... Like, honestly, a lot of this film separates our team, and I'm realizing more and more that when they are completely separate, this is where the film falls apart. It's their tether by Dom, some magical gasoline-fueled way that makes it work. That when they're apart, it just seems to, like, sputter. The forced kind of conflict between Rome and Tej is just, okay, can we go somewhere with this? Like, I remember Ramsey being... kind of like being a bad guy, but like she just made a bad product that fell in the bad guy's hand. And like she's still kind of around, but like, you know, I don't know. But yeah, when they're apart, this really doesn't work. And the action is the action. It's good. There definitely was an interesting mix of like CG with like using drone cameras to kind of do some things. And that gets very farcical, as you would think. And it doesn't look as good as what you would want it to. But it's passable enough because there's a lot of the action. You get big fights. You get big blow-ups. You get cool cars. Not necessarily in races, except you do get one. I guess, if anything, they made up for what we lacked inside of Fast Five with races, and they gave you one from here. A little 10 years too late, but they got it. And Danielle Melcher, she's in this. You know, Ratcatcher's daughter inside of the Suicide Squad. Well, yeah, she's in this because she plays... Dom's baby mama's sister. So this is kind of like Star Wars 2. And I swear that there were some like Star Wars references inside of this film, kind of like hinting that this is kind of like Star Wars, because everybody and their mother, and I mean that, and their mother is in this film. Shaw's mom comes back in this film somehow. There's cameos galore. Anyone who's related to anyone will make their way inside this film. I mean, hell, Dom just found out. Well, Dom didn't find out, but we as an audience found that the Dom had a brother out of all these years. And then also in this film, they found a way to be able to get Rita Moreno. Yes, that Rita Moreno inside this film as Dom's grandma. And someone, can you please tell me, what is Dom? I thought he was like a just light-skinned dude in the first movie. Then I thought maybe he's Italian, maybe he's Spanish, maybe he's mixed. I got no clue. I don't think he knows. I think if somebody were to ask him honestly, hey, like, what's the heritage of Dom Toretto? Sounds like Italian. You got a Spanish... I don't know, man. I don't know. So yeah, was I moved in the end? No. There's some truly asinine stuff at work. Because yes, you get like all the elements that I described before. And then truly, the ending of this film is, I think, what hurts it the most. Is that it ends on a cliffhanger. But then not really, because then it gives us two other scenes that deviate from the cliffhanger. Leave us at the cliffhanger! That's the point of the hanger on the cliff! I'm baffled by it all. And it's really interesting because I like it. Like, I do, kind of. Listen, when I first watched the movie, like, everything that can be thrown at the screen is thrown at the screen. You get the fast cars. You get this familial melodrama. And I mean, Dom, Vin Diesel, he's going for it. He's trying his best to talk about family. When the movie's about action and blowing shit up, it's doing really good. When it's about family and melodrama, if it doesn't have a new song to it, it's really not great. And it's cartoonishly like buffoonish. It's physics-defying action. And it takes so much suspension of disbelief necessary to make this charmingly absurd story work and come together at all. And the thing is, while watching it, you'll enjoy almost every minute of it. And then when you get home and you think back on it, you are going to completely undo everything that you, because it doesn't make any sense. But then we're going to keep watching. Because that's what family's all about. It doesn't always make sense, but we got one. Yo, the Colby told me rating for Fast X. I feel like I need to re-rate the entire franchise because I think I was being too nice to it before, but like these numbers got to make sense. But then the names don't make sense. Colby told me ratings of 5 out of 10. This movie was kind of directed by Justin Lin, and then stepped in Louis Leterrier. It's written by Dan Mazu and Justin Lin. It is starring everybody and your mama, Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Jason Statham, Jordana Brewster. Hold on, before I go any further, where's Brian? Remember, y'all, Brian is still alive in this universe. Where is he? Because his wife, Jordana Brewster Mia, is getting her ass mollywopped inside of this house. And my dude's somewhere in Argentina chilling with the kids. Ugh. This has Tyrese Gibson, Chris Ludacris Bridges, Natalie Emmanuel, Charlize Theron somehow sticks around to keep doing these movies. John Cena is inside this thing. So is Sung Kang, Helen Mirren, Brie Larson. For whatever reason, she makes no sense in this movie. Scott East was in this film. Of course, Jason Momoa and Alan Ritchson is in here. The other first Aquaman, Louis De Silva Jr., Danielle Melchior, shout out to Ratcatcher Jr., Leo Peloperi, Joaquin De La Meda, and Rita Moreno. This movie is now playing in theaters everywhere. Well, that'll do it for this one. Can't wait to get you the next one. Until then, like, subscribe, comment, and share. I'm going under the sea with Halle Bailey. Woo-hoo! For Disney's next live-action remake, The Little Mermaid, coming soon. Once again, thanks for rocking with me. And remember, when they ask you where you heard it from, tell them Kobe told me. Peace.